Thanks Dave, so much for having me. I'd like to try to get us to step back a little bit. Stepping back during what hopefully is the peak of the pandemic is really, really difficult because you think day by day at the moment. You think week by week. You don't tend to think, what will I be doing in 3 months' time? And you look back a couple of months and you think, what on earth was I thinking? But pandemics, even this one, which is not as large as 1918-19, which may not be as large as the 1968 pandemic, which I suspect hardly any of you can remember, even if you were in it, but it killed 1 million people worldwide. The time comes when the pandemic is over. And there were long-term trends occurring anyway, and those long-term trends will continue. But of course, there'll be an influence in terms of what has recently happened. I've spent 6 years looking at long-term trends, and the one interesting thing I have to say to you is that I was expecting to find many things accelerating and increasing, and what I found was a whole set of things slowing down faster than people thought they were, even before this process that we're currently in began. And I'm going to show you some graphs. Normally it's very difficult to explain these graphs. This is by far the most complicated one. But of course, right now it is rather easy to explain to people the issues of acceleration and deceleration and why it matters if something is going up, but up slightly more slowly than it was before. So what is this graph? This graph on the y-axis, the vertical axis, is showing the number of cases of people who died each day, often by hospital records in these seven countries. And on the horizontal axis is the rate of change. So the faster the increase, the further to the right the line swings. When the line swings over the central axis, it means you're getting a reduction in the rise. Still rising, but not as fast. And the further it goes to the right, the faster the deceleration. Now, hopefully you're looking around and trying to work it out. I told you this is by far the most complicated graph I'm going to show, but you're interested in it because you want to know what's happening. Right at the very bottom of the graph is a tiny little purple line. That's China. Tiny number of people have died in China. And you'll see little wiggles in that tiny purple line at the bottom. Because as this thing rises and as it falls, it loops. I won't go any further than that, if anyone wants to ask, but it's interesting. The line above that purple line is red. It's Germany. The great success story of Europe. This data is about a week old. For those of you who are feeling down at the moment, I can tell you, if you update this graph, it gets better news. There is kind of good news out there. The dark blue line is the United States. Of course, much bigger population came later and zooms off and above. But even in the United States, it's now probably past the peak, or at least past the first peak. The light blue line is France. France looks bad because in France they included all the care home deaths as well from quite early on. We are the green line. Now, if you add the care home deaths, which are not there, our line is actually almost identical to France's. But what matters isn't that. What matters is you can see we're beginning to loop down. We're on our first loop down. Italy and Spain were already looping, and it carries on. Now, I'm not showing you that because I want to talk to you about the pandemic. I'm showing you that because I want to talk about acceleration, deceleration, and these kinds of graphs. And I'm going to zip forward quickly for a few of them. The conventional way in which you look at change over time is like this. This is a population graph. This is the kind of graph that's normally used to scare university students into thinking everything's going to come to an end. It's all terrible. And it all depends on how you draw these things. And you'll be aware of this particular kind of graph. Let me show you a different way. This is that same graph, but now drawn where on the horizontal axis you've got the rate of change and on the vertical axis you've got the total number of people. This is in the world. And looking at it this way, you can see that the rate of change stopped increasing from about 1990, stayed pretty high, another 80 million people every year, and we are currently set to have absolutely rapid deceleration, and in our grandchildren's lifetime, we will have the first ever stabilisation of the human species since it became a species. It's a kind of good news story. I don't have time to leave these things on too long, but I'm just trying to give you an idea. Exactly the same data, as in that last scary graph, but looked at it a very different way. I'm going to log it for anybody who's particularly nerdy, and it provides a kind of summary of the major demographic events of the species of the last 2,000 years. 1492, what did we do? We took an infectious disease to the Americas, hence the dent. 1820, 1830, 1840, what did we do? We destroyed civilizations across Africa and much of the rest of the world. This slowdown and little red dot showing it now is not because of pandemics as in the past, not because of wars, not because of colonialism. This is because people are taking control, and particularly women, of their own bodies. Let's get off demography though and zoom forward to something else. This is GDP. Now we tend to look at GDP, and when it slows down, we tend to ascribe that to particular events. We have a tendency to say, oh, that was due to the oil crash in the 70s, or that was due to the recession of the 80s, or that was the dot-com crash, or that was the 2008 Great Global Recession. But this particular way of looking at it, you can perhaps see that it was generally slowing, absolutely, since 2006. Still rising, but not rising as quickly. The next graph, exactly the same data, but a log scale. And if you squint, you can see that 1950 was the highest rate of acceleration of GDP. And that thing is moving, shifting towards the left. Rising, but on average, less each decade compared to the decade before. Now, this is before the pandemic. Why does this matter? Why does it matter? I looked at the effect of pandemics in this book, Slowdown Book. And pandemics, at least since 1665, tended to have very small effects. The 1918-1919 flu pandemic resulted in a 14% drop in world GDP, which then rose by 16% the next year. The 1968 pandemic, almost no effect whatsoever. However, this pandemic, a relatively small pandemic hopefully, has hit at a time when we are decelerating, unlike those previous ones, and that may matter. Things which aren't decelerating. I only found four things, and I looked at thousands. Only four things are actually accelerating. And of course, you can't have many things accelerating all the time. Everything has to come down. And the four, at least three of them, are rather obvious. This is carbon emissions. How many billions of tons of carbon we're emitting. And you'll see it's kind of leading towards the right. So it's not just that we're emitting more each year, but we're actually emitting even more than the year before on average. And sadly, every time we have one of these global meetings like at Paris and Kyoto and so on, we tend to congratulate ourselves, take our eye off the ball, and admit even more in the years after one of those meetings than we did before. So that's one of our disaster scenarios, carbon emissions. That's what it looks like on a conventional graph, by the way. And the reason I'm drawing these weird graphs is because it really highlights the inflections, the moment of change, because that's what we're interested in. If there is going to be a change to the long-term trend, there'll be a little hint at it at the beginning before then. Anyway, this is where we were. And as Susan said earlier, China, 25% down carbon emissions in just a few weeks at the very start of this crisis. It'll be much, much, much lower now. Why do we worry about carbon? We worry about carbon because of temperature. Here's one of several temperature graphs. This is temperature rising to be a degree above normal according to NASA, and it's leading the wrong way. It's going right. So global temperature was not just increasing, it was increasing by slightly more each year than the year before, and became absolutely obvious after 2009, which is why the climate skeptics all shut up and then found some other obnoxious thing to get involved in. Temperature, quietly, and please don't spread this because it's irresponsible to say it, but a NASA estimate of global temperature for February 2020 is a tenth of a degree below February 2019. We get the data every month. Temperature is complicated, but we may not just see a fall in carbon this year. We may actually begin to see a stalling in the rise of temperatures, because the relationship really can be that close. And if you look at the temperatures on this one, you'll see that they don't rise very quickly in 1983, which was a global recession, or in 1990, which was a global recession, or in 2008-2009, you'll see they're not rising. Global recessions are about the best thing you can have for not increasing global temperatures. There's a 2008 one. GDP. China was slowing before the crisis began. The world was heading towards a global economic recession before this began. Do not think that everything that was happening before this began is immaterial. It really should matter. And my evidence for that is those previous pandemics, flu 1968, 1957, 1951 and 1918, did not dent the trend, but the trend was going the other way. This trend was already slowing before this pandemic hit. Stock prices. Stocks and shares. This is the Nasdaq. This is the dot-com crash. It's a kind of wonderful roller coaster. Loop the loop. There it goes. Round once. Round again. Okay? And that's a big shock to investors. But after 2008, 2009, the Nasdaq goes up and up and up. Everybody thinks the pension fund is fun. The USS is okay. Whatever's all right. And there it goes to 2019. This way of drawing graphs doesn't predict the future, when it kind of shows you how precarious the past was. Not many more to go. This is a third of the only four things I found accelerating.
And it's funny.
Okay, not a bad thing at all. This is university graduates worldwide. But we'll probably see a deceleration in that. If we work in universities, this is what we're slightly terrified about at the moment. Things that are odd or might surprise you at first. The rate of extinction of species was not accelerating. Sounds like good news, and it is, but if the rate of species had actually carried on at the rate we were losing species in the 80s, we'd all be dead. So it's good that that's decelerating. Anyway, I thought I should show that. And here's the fourth. I looked at over 1,000 global trends. I only found four that were accelerating. They are all falling now. Air flights, a tiny number of us. Hardly any of us fly on the world. Fewer people fly every year as a proportion of the global population than before. But the tiny numbers who are flying, we were flying 4 billion trips a year. And of course, that has ended now. It'll start again. I don't think it'll ever get back to where it was in 2017, 18, 19. Almost at the end. I didn't invent these graphs. These were invented by social scientists in Japan in the 1970s. And it's interesting that one of the most stable places in the world, in terms of change not occurring that quickly, in terms of what we call two lost decades, in the place with the highest life expectancy in the world. They draw these graphs before. This is one about Tokyo beginning not to change. And of course, these come from scientists. So you might dislike the fact that physicists use these, but it's ways of plotting the dampening of a pendulum. It's all about change and trying to understand how things are slowing down. And it helps you think, I think, in different ways. My last slide before I get muted. Jerry's very good. You can read a few words there. We have no idea how this is going to play out. There's enormous amount of fear at the moment. There are incredible arguments between brilliant epidemiologists as to whether the fatality rate is 3%, which would be truly awful, or 0.3%, or even 0.1%. So we don't know, but we're going to know so much more in about a month. As was argued before, Bridget said, we shouldn't be obsessed by individual countries. It's how our data tends to be collected. But clearly, the fact that the curves of France and the UK are so incredibly close, that even with our, I would say, fairly spectacularly incompetent C-team cabinet, possibly the worst cabinet ever, it didn't make that much difference to the actual trends in what happened, that we had a less able government than other European countries have had. There will be fewer flights in future. The wealth of billionaires has fallen by at least a third and possibly by a half by now because stocks and shares have fallen. The London housing market is simply not going to be there in any fashion than it was before. Although the people who suffer most at the moment are the poorest have no wealth to lose. And enormous amounts of wealth have simply evaporated. They simply don't exist anymore. And that wealth is not going to come back in the form it was, because it relied on sentiment. The idea that a property was worth this much. The idea that stocks and shares would rise in future. The idea that terrible events couldn't happen. And of course, now we've learnt again that pandemics can happen. Once this one is over, at least us for the rest of our lives will be wondering, when's the next one going to come? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Danny. Okay. thanks. Okay, I've got some questions for Danny. I've got a few people wanting to know about the software you use for your slides, Danny. So
again,
come to that, but I'll give you the other two first. Well, one's a sort of prompted by your presentation, and it's from Tim May saying, given the freneticism we've seen in the pursuit of profit and associated searches for reducing costs by moving across the globe for production, how do you see the pandemic tempering these aspirations, and what are the possible consequences for different ways of life? And secondly, from Ruth Beresford, who's encouraged to hear that great economic inequality will be hard to sustain. What politics and ideology do you think there is or there needs to be to support that and for there to be a more democratic, democratic shift to greater equality?
Okay, thank you. Okay, the software is remarkably easy. It's just Excel. The older I get, the less able I am to use the kind of software I could when I was younger. So it's just Excel, but there's one trick, and that trick is my friend Kirsty McClure. Kirsty is normally a busker on the London Underground, and in fact looks after the union of buskers on the Underground, but she's also a graphic designer. So I just gave her the Excel sheets, and Kirsty redrew them for the publisher. But it's as simple as that. It is trivially simple. To do this, it's just that we've had a sort of 20 years of moving away from data in sociology and human geography, which has actually opened up a position where really simple graphs of basic data look novel because people haven't been looking at data for a long time. Tim's question, that the whole point of what I was working on for the last 6 years was to say that we were moving in a particular direction which appeared to be away from seeing inequality as good, away from not worrying about the environment. There were lots of signs of things actually getting better. We don't tend to look for those signs because, like little magnets, we're kind of drawn to where is the disaster, what's going wrong, let's talk about that, let's talk about the unfairness, let's talk about the injustice. But there were lots of signs of things getting better. One was that there was a period a few years ago where the infant mortality rate in the world fell by 10% in a year. It will never fall as fast again. It can't. Finland has now got it down to some ridiculous level, like 1.7 babies dying per thousand, one of the best rates in the world. This isn't a thesis of we became richer and it became better. We started to care more, we've become older, we've become more educated, a little bit less vicious than we were before, and there was various pieces of evidence for that. So I've published this book, finished writing it in January, which was saying many of the things that people say that we should get out of COVID were possibly on the cards before then, because the acceleration of CO2 was absolutely impossible. Now, how you get it is difficult, and that brings me lastly to Ruth's question about the politics. So the only thing I noted about the politics was I think there's been a deceleration in the creation of new political movements. And this is very, very contentious. But if you think of words like socialism, or if you think about when the Green Parties were first founded in the 1970s, then you think, well, what did we do in the 80s? What did we do in the 90s? I do make an argument in this book that there's a slowing down in the invention of new kinds of isms and the maturity amongst things that are progressive. So thinking about how do you actually hardwire environmental behaviour into your thinking, which we're now seeing in incredible plans for Madrid to pedestrianise large parts of it, of its centre as it unlocks and so on. But a more mature, more boring politics, because, and this is the crucial thing, in the 1920s, 30s and 40s, we were hurtling forward at an unbelievable speed in terms of what was happening to us. The tractor was only invented in 1908. People had no idea what was going to happen next. It was a roller coaster world that our grandparents and great-grandparents lived through. Our world is slower and slower. Less actually happens. So when something like this happens, it blows us completely off course because we're used to the utter predictability. You know, there weren't going to be any pandemics. There weren't going to be any wars. We might occasionally get an economic crash, and if you're middle class, that's slightly disappointing. But because things have slowed down, when we get something like this, it is an incredible shock, because we can't think of something similar in our lives, because we've been lucky, because we've lived through a slower period of change than previous generations have.
Thanks, Danny. Okay.